Hello and welcome to Literally from the North Shore. We're glad you tuned in. Today we'll hear the fifth and final episode of The Bowser Chronicles. The Bowser Chronicles was written by Two Harbors native Glenn Sandvik and is read for us by Tom Kohler, KTWH's volunteer. So we'll pick up where Tom left off and finish the story today.
Yes, that tugboat watch cat witnessed lights boldly pierce the gloom, saving vessels and men alike from their watery doom. But Bowser also watched in shock deeds of humans so dark, no beacon air could penetrate nor any lightness spark. One summer's eve, a Duluth street, that tug up for a tow, that cat saw and heard angry men parading to and fro. In sullen, surly whispers and in curses cried aloud, men of small minds and smaller souls made a mob of the crowd. They decried a most heinous crime by a young woman told, against three carnival workers hind their circus tents fold. The mob demanded pain and blood, sought vengeance without fail. With rocks and clubs drove police off and stormed into the jail. Could passions have been fueled to rage and anger flushed by fright because the carnies' skins were black while all the towns were white? The three young men, bound up in ropes, were dragged into the street. Though each had denied any crime, all knew the fate they'd meet. Fear of men glistened in their eyes as the crowd spat and clawed, yet in their faces Bowser saw each was at peace with God. From one lamppost all three were hanged, amid jeers, cheers, and sneers. Then, as life ebbed and lights fell dark, the mob shed bitter tears that night as that tug headed home, neath skies as dark as skin. A storm rolled over Duluth's hills with lightning and gale wind. Bowser, from that tug's pilot rail, watched nature's tempest songs and knew God in heaven had shown his fury at men's wrongs. The Edna G. and sister ships on the freshwater sea knew nature as their best ally and their worst enemy. Among nature's pernicious tricks which with relish she played, those mystic floating clouds of fog haunted the marine trade. The fogs of Lake Superior could be bright as the sun, or dark and cold and sullen as night stalkers on the run. Wisp airs might slink across the lake to swallow ship and crew, which made that tug's job difficult when vessels hid from view. In fog, a Laker's forward crew could lose sight of her aft, and in such cases more than once near sliced that tug in half. Yet real dangers came to loom when pea soup settled down to blot out not just sailors' sights, but sounds to also drown. In flannel fogs even that cat lost his full sense of sight, and Bowser's ears, sharp as a ping, still could not hear things right. For though the Edna G might lay just 90 yards from land, the port's foghorn seemed to sound from every compass hand. The tugboat crew, waiting her tow, would hollow from the deck, hear Laker bells, starboard and port, then breathing down their neck. On just such days, Bowser's pal Duke would ride the tug to help. With forepaws on the forward rail, that dog would bark and yelp. Until one night, in soup so thick it pressed against your eyes, the Duke, hearing his voice behind, swallowed it in surprise. He turned so fast to hear himself in fog, he lost his tail, so he could neither bark nor wag till sunshine pierced the veil. Bowser, that tugboat watch cat, knew lake weather like his paw, and among nature's varied feats one instilled special awe. Winds northeast on the weather vane, mercury in a dive, no matter what the time of year, imperiled all alive. Northeaster, just the breath of it, in sailors' blood sent chills. Nor'easter, the full force of it, also spawned maddened thrills. Lake birds and beasts knew well enough to shelter from a blow, and most lake fish protection found by swimming deep below. But lake's men, for all that they knew, still did not know enough to get or keep themselves safe from nor'easter's brutal stuff. Nature's breath churned up combers huge, capping the lake in white, driving water at 60 knots, 25 feet in height. Where sea met land, havoc held sway, and beaches were swept clear, while streams that galloped to the lake sometimes flowed to their rear. All things not planted firm by God, all things anchored by men, might simply explode or simply dissolve, not to be seen again. Warehouses, docks, and breakwalls fell when real nor'easters blew, as at Duluth and Crystal Bay and Silver Islet, too. Folk stories also took root in the backwash of each storm. Such was the fish tree of Larsemont, a pine of gnarled form. Though nearly half a mile from shore, lake tempests scarred the tree and embedded in its red bark gifts from the inland sea. These countered a 4-pound herring by northeast winds set sail. That fish dove into the pine's trunk, impaled up to its tail. The Edna G. with her watch cat in nor'easters was bold, as in the epic '05 blow, which has before been told. Near every season, so it seemed, at least one storm did brew, which called that tug and that cat out for search or for rescue. The captain's log, which Bowser read, recorded each venture to aid men and ships in distress upon Superior. Those simple phrases and curt words in a book failed to tell the awesome weight of lives at risk which on that tug's crew fell. Sometimes the ships were lost, off track or hiding from the wind. At other times they were crippled by nature or by men. The list of storm-tossed vessels whom that tugboat gave aid to read like a shipwreck catalogue, a Julius Wolfe who's who. A sister tug, the Niagara, on the Knife Isle aground, the Hopkins and Apostles wreck, when with timber downbound, the Ben Noble, which disappeared in 1914, Bowser was sure just where she'd sunk. The treacheries of Isle Royal were given witness by the manifest of able ships which that cat there saw die. The Monarch one December struck and was broken in two. The Kamloops a few winters more vanished till spring no clue. The Glenyon and the Steinbrenner to nor'easters fell prey, and at the Regal Isle each spent her final fateful day. As sorry, though no man died, was the wreck of George M. Cox. The luxury liner met her end on Rock of Ages rocks. Bowser, Superior Watch Cat, saw many lake boats die. Two diverse Isle Royal wrecks stuck in his mind and his eye. First, the packet America on the North Shore, well known, from Duluth down to Thunder Cape, where she brought comforts home. On a spring night in 28, the lake, as smooth as glass, the America kissed a shoal and started sinking fast. They tried to beach her, hit a ledge, stuck a stone's throw from ground, though passengers and crew were safe. A dog Bowser knew drowned. That cat and island residents the steamer's loss would mourn. Hers was the passing of a friend which left lake folks forlorn. Yet that summer, America, as she slid down her ridge, also provided fresh produce from nature's icy fridge. Bold fishermen braved the lake's cold, dove to the galley trunk, fed their families fruits, vegetables, fresh as the day they sunk. a quarter century later, to the month just about, off Isle Royale's eastern coast, the lake once more won out. The loser, Henry Steinbrenner, for 5 decades had plied the Great Lakes iron trades, wherein with nature she had vied. But when the Steinbrenner, awash, sent out her call, May Day, the lake was quick to claim its prize, and the ship slipped away. That tug and that cat responding steamed to the sinking spot, where keen-eyed Bowser peered and saw a boat small as a dot. Because of him, the captain and 4 more crewmen were saved, and once again lake denizens about that watch cat raved. Bowser, that dog-eared sentinel aboard the Edna G, came to recognize every fleet that sailed the inland sea. Lakes, fleets, like church congregations and tribes and ethnic sets, displayed characteristics which marked each one from the next. Some wore distinctive emblems on their stacks or on their stems, while some bore names of men of wealth, their heirs, and their good friends. Still others were distinguished by the tracks their masters made, or by the towns their crews called home, or where their keels were laid. That cat knew best the steel trust boats, which from 2 harbors hauled a vast array of iron ships, tin stackers most were called. The Pittsburghers, of course, all were just like the Edna G, pistons which drove the behemoth of the steel industry. Bowser knew, too, was known by Interlake and Kinsman, by Buckeye and Columbia, which loaded now and then. By Bethlehem, Wilson Transit, whose crews dressed all in blue, by Ford Motor and Cleveland Cliffs and Great Lakes Transit, too. He watched the Northern Lines as well, Canada's steamships, black Algoma carriers, each with a Bruin upon her stack. Packet fleets and general freight lines were by that watch-cat known. Banners of Booth and Dominion were at Agate Bay flown. The masters of the Jack and Ace of the famed poker fleet could sometimes be spotted along the small port town's main street. Yes, Bowser, ever vigilant aboard the Edna G, recognized all fleets near all boats which sailed the inland sea. While that lake, that tug, and their pulse e'er set that cat's heart throb, Bowser again cultivated a life outside his job. He resumed rounds round the port town, to his pre-war haunts went, made new friendships, reaffirmed old, with the Duke much time spent. Those bosom pals again patrolled, cat and dog as one prowled, lent aid, found fun, with Bowser mute, while sometimes that hound howled. They'd rest and reflect in church lofts, at peace with men and God, then set out to take port life in, main streets and backyards trod. That most noble experiment, at taverns they observed, few took prohibition to heart, a fate perhaps deserved. Make no mistake, that watch-cat had liquor's harsh lessons learned, yet drink he never did disdain, rather drunkenness spurned. Bowser also caught the beat of the jazz age, words and sound, read Fitzgerald and Lewis when to the library bound. Woeful yet joyous tones and tunes would in that cat's ears hum. Jazz rhythm and its syncopation set his forepaws to drum. The music's magic drew folks to an inn not far from town, a citadel inn and of pine, its color scheme all brown. The White Caps, as the place was known, was like a movie scene. Flivvers dropped, flappers at its doors, bathed in the moonlight's sheen. Inside, clarinets, a saxophone, blue notes, both hot and cool. A smoke-wreathed piano jangled when jasmine manned its stool. Thus often on a Sunday's dawn, when music ceased to be, the cat jitterbugged, boogalooed back home to Edna G. Bowser watched Porktown politics and heard the day's debate waged by Edna G's Winter Club, whose members would orate. They'd give voice to the issues which drove their state and nation. Thus the Tug's Cuddy added strength to freedom's foundation. Democrats and Republicans contested for the floor, while reasoned discourse was the goal. Loudness oft counted more. And mid the rhetoric and din of politics mainstream, that cat also learned politics of the fringe and a dream. William Jennings Bryan enjoyed favor among town folk. Ignatius Donnelly, populist, true ardor could evoke. Twice for president, Eugene Debs carried the people's vote, and Roosevelt's Bull Moose ticket found friends on that tugboat. On home ballots, too, citizens with radicals kept touch, with communists and socialists, with Finns and Linds and such. Wobblies and other syndicalists for years put up a slate, which always challenged, never ruled, contented with that fate. A socialist, once mayor one, Chas Rufus was his name, yet while bankers and merchants buzzed, the town hall stayed the same. Then laborites with farmers formed a statewide dynasty. Two harbors helped elect men for whom the nation were key. So Bowser, though a working cat from a small working town, saw and heard politicians who were known the world around. Thus Humphrey and Mondale, when they as vice presidents sat campaigning with folks at home, were photographed with that cat. Prosperity and politics were fun in that cat's town until paper markets crashed and the whole world hoovered down. Two Harbors' depression was deep as Lake Superior, steel hearths as cold as the Great Lake, no longer called for ore. The iron trains and iron boats laid rusting, engines blocked for weeks and months, and then for years the Edna G was docked. Bowser watched as steam ran out of the port's economy, no work, no pay, day after day. Soon townsfolk were hungry. The hunger was the gnawing sort, ate at body and mind. When all the nation shared your fate, hope could be hard to find. The malaise infected creatures, four-legged as well as two. Even the carefree, raucous gulls in hard times sounded blue. Port children, like their mothers' soups, grew paler and more thin, yet scarcity prompted townsfolk to reach out, not turn in. At the house which the Duke called home, even transients were fed. Hobos lined up at the back stoop, from children received bread. Gluttony also reared its head in tragic occurrence, as Bowser saw among port cats in the storm fry incidents. A nor'easter tossed herring young high on a beach to flop. Hungry felines converged in lines to gorge fish without stop. The next day 14 cats returned to gulp herring and gloat, but dead fish dried and stiffened till bones lodged in a kit's throat. One meal had been a gift from God, the second greed inspired. Each cat choked slowly, painfully, with bellies full expired. Bowser, senses by hunger honed, watched hard times silently, saw an alphabet of relief surge to the inland sea. FDR offered hope after Hoover's dour countenance, determination, cocksure smile, a poor man's rich man's stance. Roosevelt spoke from his heart to the hearts of working men and used Uncle Sam's full reserve to help them work again. It mattered not jobs were make work and just worked day to day. Families bought groceries, dignity through WPA. The tugboat's crew dug sewer lines around the small port town and rebuilt streets and sidewalks by laying cement mud down. A new high school rose, promising brighter futures for all. Laborers etched in bas-relief watched its performance hall. Yet youth who passed its doors still met recession's daunting face, for if their fathers had not work, where could be their workplace? Harold Ickles one answer found and named it CCC. Civilian Conservation Corps would help boys men to be. Cross Minnesota's Arrowhead and Rowley's woods camps made, with military regime pines planted and parks laid. As at Gooseberry Falls, where they built native stone ramparts, which long as monuments will stand to workers' hands and hearts. From depths of the Great Depression, the port would slowly rise, as once again iron trains rolled, sent steam clouds to the skies. The recovery was driven by the acts of one madman, when U.S. Steel armed Britain to halt Hitler's fatherland. A cold Sunday on Edna G., the fireman and that cat kept coals beneath the boiler and heard Jack Benny's chit-chat. Then the name Pearl Harbor buzzed out of the radio, and all Americans prepared again to war to go. That war, that tug would stay at home, patriots' work to do, and Bowser, patriotic cat, would stay home with her too. Where iron trains and iron boats met cargoes to exchange, the ore docks hummed and iron drummed with the wealth of the range. That cat would stand his tugboat watch 24 hours a day as the harbor's pulse pounded and war's fevers soon held sway. Many Agate Bay men and boys signed up with Uncle Sam to take up arms, fight freedom's foes, and keep safe the homeland. While on the home front, those who stayed adopted army rules, so that even that tugboat's crew counted guns among their tools. Yes, armed guards patrolled the ore docks, spotting for subs and planes to keep swastikas, rising suns clear of commercial lanes. Those townspeople whose husbands and whose sons answered the call accepted wartime regimens with noble wherewithal. They smiled at nighttime blackout drills, coupons, and ration books. They'd weathered the Depression with just such stoic outlooks, but from the papers, the airwaves, new names, let old fears go. Normandy, the Marshalls, Guam, the hills round Anzio. Acts of war waged in worlds removed haunted all in the port. Altar candles and gold stars shone with each battle report. Among war's acts, which Bowser watched from his tugboat station, Eagle Olson's piracy would surely shock the nation. Eagle, a freshwater sailor, was Norway-born and bred. He'd long wintered at two harbors, took food and laid his head. But things weren't right in Eagle's head, as all would come to see. To deny his deeds were treason would have been heresy. A giant of the human breed in stature and in strength, he was a Steel Trust second mate, renowned the Great Lakes length. One night an ore-filled laker left Duluth for Erie's shore, its cargo indispensable for a country at war. 'Twas Eagle's watch, the wheel was his, due north of Devil's Isle. He locked the cabin, called the chief, and with a self-sure smile, headed for home, the ship his own westward to Agate Bay. A patriot's crew, yet none so fool to contest Eagle's way, at dawn the hijacked iron boat was greeted by that tug. Guided to berth, guarded by men who guns and clubs did hug, Eagle, locked in the pilot house, seemed pleased port chums to see. One by one took them in to show his prize, his victory. Coffee and rum, stories told of changes in the town, soon lured Eagle with all his pals to take a stroll around. New books, new tools, a new bar tap, all toasted with a drink, inspecting the sheriff's new paint, brought Eagle to the clink. Cell doors clanged shut, his boat steamed off, war's triumphs to help find, while Eagle Olson lost the keys to freedom and his mind. Bowser kept through the war, named to his mind and his eyes clear. His watch cat duties he performed to that tugboat stayed near. And unlike his dark memories of the war known as one, there'd be some times and some events which were just downright fun. One autumn day, 'neath sunny skies, set out the Edna G, taking steel moguls to Duluth, a loyalty show to see. Rich men from Pittsburgh, Chicago, who in war's pain found gain, on tour to inspect aspects of their vast steel trust domain. At one of half a dozen yards in the bustling twin ports, five ships that day slid down the way to salutes, gun reports. The docks and shores and ships rang out with shouts and songs and cheers. The Dion Quince, Canada-born, christened their sea sisters. The ace of aces soared overhead, young Richard Ira Bong, flying feats from Pacific skies, oohed and awed the port's throng. The local hero smiled and waved so near that all could see, then tipped his wings, climbed out of sight in his plane named Margie. Hollywood cameras caught the scenes, the hooplas and the hypes, to rally troops and folks at home around the stars and stripes. Later, as that tug headed home under a sky star-laced, Bowser closed his eyes, saw the flag, his heart with fervor raced. Yet, like the Edna G's fireman, whose son was at some front, and like so many, through the land, concern gnawed, pleasure blunt. No matter how the battles fared, nor how the rights freedom's cause, fears ruled the world till families could, united in peace, pause.
Thus concludes the Bowser Chronicles. The book was written by Two Harbors native Glenn Sandvik, and thank you again to the family and to Betsy Bowen Studio of Grand Marais, which published the book in 2020 with illustrations done by Betsy Bowen, for permission to broadcast this reading. The web address for Betsy Bowen Studio is woodcut.com. And also, of course, thanks to Tom Kohler for your very endearing reading of the Bowser Chronicles. All five episodes that we aired this week are posted on our website, ktwh.org. Under the Programs tab, you'll find Literally from the North Shore. Next week, we'll begin a new book, Shelter Half, by Minnesota author Carol Bly. It'll be read for us by Connie Ellis, whose voice you've heard in the past reading her own book, The Ice Dancer, and short stories. Shelter Half will run for 4 weeks, and it's a novel also set in northern Minnesota.